got his PhD at the University of Dublin, spent time at the Albert Einstein Institute and at Cornell, and is currently jointly in Dublin and at Cornell. In his research, he looks at sources of gravitational radiation, extreme mass ratio, fine wave spirals, subfast calculations, and other things. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, so this talk today is a little bit different than what I normally do. I'm actually going to present a package that's been written by a lot of different people for doing tensor algebra using Mathematica. So Eric tells me that a lot of people here should be fairly familiar with Mathematica, but not necessarily with the particular tensor algebra package I'm going to talk about, which is exact. As a motivation for using tensor algebra in Mathematica, I'm going to give a couple of examples from my own research in binary black hole problems and in other various problems that I've worked on, where the fact that I'm able to do these calculations has made the problem immensely easier. Okay, so let's hope this works. Yes, okay. Okay, so I probably don't need to motivate this talk, but I'm going to give one slide anyway, if only because I can show a nice figure I got from a paper. So tensor algebra is hard. It's not hard in the sense of solving quantum gravity or something like that, but it's hard for humans. The reason it's hard is because calculations are long, they're boring, tedious, highly prone to error, and also they're very difficult to reproduce. So if you read a paper and someone says a little bit of index manipulation later, here's the result. You try and reproduce that, you could spend half a day or a day just trying to get it out again. So there are lots of reasons why you don't want to do tensor calculations by hand. And somehow this figure actually made it into a paper in 1980, which was kind of a review of various methods, and this was their section on tensor algebra. Okay. Anyone who's done these calculations by hand will probably, you probably won't be able to make out the details of this, but you'll recognize this sort of thing. This is a calculation from the early days of my PhD research, which were expansions, and all of these things here are tensors. There are a whole lot of indices that you probably can't really make out. Each one of these is a Riemann tensor. There are lots of them. You're trying to notice that some terms cancel with other ones. It's a complete nightmare. And it's not just one page, but it keeps going on and on and on. Okay. Eventually, you have to start using bigger sheets of paper. So my PhD advisor at the time pulled out some A3 pages, which are twice as big, which he used for his calculations. So that was the solution back when he did his PhD, was more paper. Okay. Hopefully, I'm going to convince you today that that's not the best solution. There are alternatives. Okay, so as opposed to doing everything using by hand, very tedious calculations, much easier to do it using a computer. Okay, so the same things that make these manipulations very difficult by hand are exactly what make them ideal for implementation in a computer package. So they're very algorithmic. You can write down a set of rules, and you apply these rules, and you get a result out. They're very well suited to implementation in computer algebra. In fact, in the early days of computer algebra, so when Mathematica was first being developed, one of the main driving motivators was exactly this sort of problem. The tensor calculus was tricky to get right, but very, very easy to do in computer algebra. Importantly, I think they're inherently reproducible. So if you come back in 10 years' time and try to remember how calculation works, you could spend a whole day doing that, or you could just open up the file that you had from before, run it, and trust that it's reproducing the same results. More than that, though, once you start being able to do things computationally, it completely transforms the type of problems you can tackle. So it's more than just a more efficient way to do a problem or a less frustrating way to solve problems. Many of the calculations that would previously be deemed impossible to do by hand suddenly are straightforward. Should have put quotes on this as well. So that's certainly true of a lot of my own research, that I've tackled some problems that previously had been done either by hand or using other software packages and hit a brick wall. As soon as we were tackling it from the right point of view, these became straightforward. Okay, so that's just a little bit of motivation. Before this coming to give this talk, I did a little bit of a survey for what's out there. I've tried some of these packages, and not all of them, I have to admit. But basically, what you want to take from this is there are already a large number of tools available to download. Some of them freely available, some of them cost a little bit of money, some of them cost a lot of money. But there are a lot of them, depending on what software you prefer to use, if you like Mathematica, or Maple, MATLAB, C, or maybe some standalone package, you can choose. Some of these are actively maintained still. Some of them were developed in the 2000s, for example, and left to kind of rot since then. This is probably not an exhaustive list, but it probably does cover a lot of the ones that people here may be familiar with. One important thing is that when people think about doing tensor algebra, there are actually two very distinct concepts that people usually want to do. And when you talk to someone, usually they have one of the two in mind, and they're surprised when your software package doesn't work that way. So the two kind of different concepts is whether you're working with kind of abstract tensor calculations, so abstract in terms of not in any specific basis, you're dealing with just abstract indices and things like that, or probably more common in the GR community, at least, is people that would like to do component calculations. So what are the components of the Riemann tensor in Schwarzschild spacetime? Or expand out this contraction of two tensors in some particular basis or in some tetrad. So the component calculations are probably the one. Yep.
Are these going to be both analytic and numerical for both kinds?
Yeah, so the component ones, there are both analytic and numerical schemes. So sometimes there are some C codes, for example, where you might have a tensor equation and you want to solve it numerically using some differential equation solver. Well, it could be convenient to write out in a very simple form the tensor equation, and the C code, these libraries will expand out the components, and then you will compute things numerically. But there are other ones that are symbolic. So GR tensor, for example, is one of the most popular ones for Maple. And most of them are actually symbolic. Just a few here are numerical. And actually, some of them you'll see also reuse features of other ones. So this Cadabra one here is quite popular. It's popular because the interface here is essentially LaTeX. So if you have an equation in LaTeX, you put it into Cadabra, and you work with it directly. So that appeals to some people. Other people like to use Mathematica. That's where they find it easiest to work, or some people prefer Maple. So it's really personal preference. The one I'm gonna try and focus on today, just and give a good motivation for why this is the most powerful tool, is EXACT. So it's built on top of Mathematica. Mathematica is basically a requirement. Unfortunately, you can't get around that. It does have a lot of features. It's very generic, so it's very, very flexible. It can do both the abstract kind of tensor manipulations, and it can also do specific component calculations symbolically using a sub-package called XCOBA. Some of its features have been incorporated into other ones because they're so the algorithms are so good. Okay, so I'm going to give an overview of EXACT. A few of the key features: it's free, which is great. You have to pay for Mathematica, but EXACT itself is free. It's open source, so if you have a feature that you'd like, you can take the code, edit it, and hopefully it'll be incorporated back into the package. It's an add-on for Mathematica. It's very robust and mature. So version 1 was released in 2010, and it's been very stable since then. There haven't been very many changes, so you can take the version now and run a code from 5 years ago, and it still runs pretty much unchanged. One of the great things is there is a lot of documentation. So if you have it installed, you can get to documentation from the Mathematica graphical user interface. It also has a lot of tutorials. If you look on the website, there are several notebooks that will take you through some of the features. Another very important thing, I think, for an open source project is that it has a strong community of users. So there's a mailing list which you can subscribe to. It's on Google Groups. People post there from time to time, maybe once a week or so, with a question, or they say, okay, I have this problem in my research. How do I solve this using Exact? And typically, someone very knowledgeable will reply within a day or so with a pretty good answer. And similarly, if you find a bug or an issue, the response will be pretty much within a couple of days. It will be identified and fixed. As well as the community of users, there's also a very strong developer community. So the original Exact package was developed by Jose Maria Martin Garcia, who is now working at Wolfram. So he's actually an employee working on developing Mathematica, but he had started Exact long before that job came along. And part of the deal, I think, when he took the job was that Exact would stay independent. So it's not going to be subsumed into a commercial package or anything like that. It's going to stay as an open source community developed project. There have been lots of other developers who've contributed small contributions or large ones. My own contributions have been very small, so I don't know if I really deserve to be listed on the list of developers, but some of the other people here have really taken over a lot of the development. And one last thing is it's very actively maintained. So still new versions coming out with new features. The latest one was just a few months ago. So as it gets upgraded, lots of new, nice new features come in. Okay. A few of the benefits of Exact. One is it's very powerful, so it's completely generic. It makes very few assumptions about what type of problem you're trying to deal with, which is a typical flaw of many other packages. They assume that you're trying to do some very specific problem. They work very well for that problem. But as soon as you try and come up with a different, unrelated problem, your software can't do it anymore. So Exact is very powerful. Almost no assumptions specific to some GR calculation or anything like that. You can have arbitrary dimensions. You can have a metric or not if you don't want one. You can even have torsion. It's very generic. The problem with that is very powerful, but very difficult to learn. It's an unfortunate truth. So it is a somewhat steep learning curve to getting running with Exact. The documentation helps a lot, and the users and developers help a lot, but you do have to invest a little bit of time in playing around with Exact before you kind of become proficient with it. A few other benefits. Well, it's been pretty well tested. On the website, I had a look, and the latest count is about 200 papers, which cite Exact as its as having been used in the calculation. So quite often, the calculations really hinge on using Exact to do the technically difficult parts. There aren't any unit tests, but there are a lot of other tests. So there are a lot of checks, correctness tests in the code. And anecdotally, at least, the bugs are very few and far between. So a bug every couple of months gets reported, and is usually fixed very quickly. So I think, very importantly, you can rely on Exact to be correct, give you the correct results, and give them efficiently. Very easy to install as well. This one is a key one. It's built on a foundation of very solid algorithms. So it has some algorithms taken from group theoretic kind of ideas, which are basically the foundation of how Exact does all of its simplifications and things like that. And they're very well thought out, very efficient algorithms. On top of that, it's written in Mathematica mostly, but part of it is implemented in C, which is already compiled when you download it, so you don't need to worry about compiling or anything. You just extract the package into a specific directory, and you're ready to go. Okay, so one last slide as a kind of overview of Exact. This is taken from a paper describing one of the components, kind of the core component of Exact, which is the canonicalizer. And this is comparing Exact, its performance at simplifying or canonicalizing an expression against some other packages. So the specific problem this was doing was if you have some anti-symmetric tensor here, a mu nu, okay, with two indices, and you contract it with itself, okay, that's That's pretty simple. And I should say that A new anti-symmetrize is equal to 0. Well, this one is already pretty simple. But if you have a third index, a third one, if you have a third one, you now have this expression. It turns out that when you have an odd number of anti-symmetric tensors contracted with each other, you get 0. This is a very simple test case. With three tensors, it's very easy. But you may have a lot more. And that's exactly what this plot is showing here. As you add more and more of these anti-symmetric tensors, you ask it to simplify the expression. Well, there are a couple of other packages here which are put in for comparison. So math tensor is there, TTC is there. And you can see that by the time you get to up to about 10 tensors in that product, it completely becomes impossible to do. This is log scale. It's, I think, in seconds. Oh, that's got screwed up there. But I guess this is up the order of a day on this plot. And you can see that X tensor, even when you have a very large number of tensors, so 50 of them, it still does things in the order of a few minutes. And if you use the C part, which comes bundled, so you basically use this almost all the time, is down to about 1 second or a couple of seconds compared to, well, I don't know, I can't extrapolate that, but probably longer than the life of the universe or something like that.
C is the compiled version?
Yeah, so there is a compiled version of XACT, of just this core piece, which does the kind of the group theory stuff. So it has a mathematical version of the implementation of it as well, which it falls back on if for some reason the C code is not there or broken or something. But in reality, this is the one you would usually have available. Okay, so that was kind of motivation. A little bit of an overview of the structure of XACT. Well, it's a modular system. There are lots of different packages that plug into each other. There is a core here of three packages, which does the canonicalization, the group theory algorithms, things like that, and kind of basic infrastructure for dealing with tensors in Mathematica. And then built on top of that, there are a whole load of problem-specific parts. Okay, so there are things like component calculations, things like perturbation theory. If you want to do spherical harmonic decompositions, there's tools for that. If you want to canonicalize complicated polynomials involving Riemann tensors, you do that. You can do the spinners, the Penrose spinners, many other things. This is how all those pieces fit together, taken from another paper by some of the XACT developers. So at the base here, you have the core package. You have this C code for SPEES hooking into the permutation group theory part. You have kind of the dealing with tensors part in Mathematica. And then you have all of these extra parts. And there are many more than this now. This was taken from a few years ago. So as people have come up with new kind of applications, there have been many more of these packages developed. Okay, following on from that, well, this was starting to get a bit unwieldy as a single distribution. So recently, a few people have created a GitHub page where anyone is free to upload their own contributed packages for XACT. So a few examples people have done, well, formatted input, just making inputting tensors a little bit easier. Manipulating expressions where you have symmetrized tensors over several indices. You can do exterior calculus. You can do equation formatting, so you can actually generate the equations to throw straight into your paper directly from XACT. A lot of people are interested in cosmology, so expansions about FRW and things like that. Exterior calculus is another one. So there's a whole host of these extra packages that people have developed. And you can get them from this GitHub site. OK, so that's an overview of XACT. You may notice that this presentation is actually a Mathematica presentation. So I have Mathematica running here. And I thought the best way to give a flavor for how powerful XACT was to actually do some worked examples. Yeah?
Sorry, if you can run one more before you get into this.
Yeah.
You said a big drawback basically was how difficult it was to learn.
So yes.
Is there any other big drawbacks, like the
So I guess, well, I think the one people complain about most is, where is it? So I said before that XACT can do both abstract calculations and component calculations. A lot of people that just want something quick and easy, they just want to know what the components of the Riemann tensor is in Schwarzschild or in whatever space-time they have is. And they don't want to go through a whole load of extra details just to get that. And so I think probably the big drawback that puts a lot of people off is the fact that it's complicated. And Xcoba is a little bit clunky as a tool for doing component calculations. I think it's probably not that I would still use it myself, but I can certainly see people's arguments why they prefer other tools at the moment. That's the main one I can think of. I don't know, possibly there are others. Okay. So to go through some basics first, just to give a flavor for how XACT works, I'm going to actually run this in Mathematica and hopefully it all works. Okay, so the first thing you need to do is to load the XACT package. So I guess if people want this notebook afterwards, I can send it around to anyone who wants it. So to load the package, you just, oops, I think I was running the kernel before. Restart my kernel. I was just running this before I started here. Okay, so the very first step is to load the XTensor package. And that's it. You can see that it's running this external C code executable, and it loads a few other pieces. It gives a disclaimer and things like that. That's straightforward. Okay, and this is probably this part here is basically the kind of initial setup. As I said, XACT is very generic. It basically makes no assumptions. And as a result of that, you have to tell it everything, which is kind of why it makes it a little bit more clunky for doing component calculations. So in this case, I'm going to specify that I have a manifold, I'm going to call it M4. It's in four space-time dimensions. And I'm going to use as indices for my tensors the letters A to Z, excluding G and H, because I want G and H for other things. Okay, so that's defining the manifold. As you can see, by default, XACT prints out a whole load of information messages telling you about what it's doing. That's a little bit of a pain sometimes, so you can turn that off. Okay, turn off the verbose output. Second step after you have a manifold is to define a metric. Okay, I've specified that the sign of my metric determinant is -1. I'm calling my metric G. It has an associated covariant derivative, and the notation for covariant derivatives is either using a semicolon at the end or nabla at the start. Okay, so that's the metric. And then the way you input tensors in XACT is you give it the name of the tensor. You have square brackets, like a normal Mathematica idea. And covariant indices have a minus sign in front of them. Contravariant indices do not. Okay, so you can have here, for example, you have the metric, the inverse metric, one up, one down, or and various other contractions. So the contraction of the metric with itself in two different ways. You can see that the output is nicely formatted as a tensor, so it has the indices exactly the way you would like it. When you have one up and one down, that turns automatically into the Kronecker delta. If you have the fully contracted metric with itself, well, it gives you 4 because I specified 4 space-time dimensions. Okay, this is all kind of the basics. Along with the metric, you get a whole lot of other things defined for you. So you get the Riemann tensor, the Weyl tensor, the Ricci tensor, Ricci scalar, all sorts of other things. This is how you input them. So they're always associated with a specific covariant derivative. You can change how these things are displayed. So this is the Riemann tensor associated with that covariant derivative. You can have multiple covariant derivatives, multiple metrics. It's all very flexible. But if you just want something simple, you can change how these are displayed. So the Riemann tensor now gets displayed in a simpler form. You have the Riemann tensor, Ricci scalar, Weyl tensor, the Einstein tensor, the Levi-Civita symbol, and the Christoffel symbol.
What about does it mean you get metric signature minus one?
That's the sign of the determinant of the metric. So if it's plus or minus one. So it's a convention choice. So it's are you talking about minus plus 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 or plus minus minus minus?
So it doesn't tell me which one it is, right? It doesn't tell me that it's minus plus 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 or it's plus minus minus.
I think it's minus one means it's try to remember this. I think it is that. I think it's not the I need to remember. But it is that convention where whether it's plus minus 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 or minus plus plus plus. I don't remember exactly how it works.
It has to be Lorentzian metric?
It can be. It doesn't have to be Lorentzian. Yeah. So it can be a spatial metric, for example, if you want. Okay. So one of the cool features is that it knows all about the symmetries of tensors. So, for example, the Riemann tensor you could write in a couple of different ways. With the indices permuted, okay, so A, B, C, D, or C, D, A, B. Well, we already know that that can be simplified very easily. The way you simplify an X tensor or an exact is using this two canonical function, which is a canonical way of simplifying things. So it always permutes all the symmetries until it gets something that is as simple as it can get. It doesn't try and do any more simplification than that. So you can see with two canonical, it has figured out that these two are actually the same as combine them into one tensor. If you instead have a different combination where you have A, B, C, D, and B, A, C, D, so you swapped A and B, well, the Riemann tensor is anti-symmetric, so you know it's going to be zero. So these are all very elementary operations that you would be able to do by hand, but it's good to see that that X tensor can handle them. Yeah. So simplification by itself is not a well-defined thing. You know, it's not well-defined whether one form of an equation is simpler than another. Whereas canonicalization has a very specific meaning, saying this is the simplified version of this equation. But it basically is simplifying. Yeah.
Is it just doing using permutation symmetries at the indices, or does it know about multi-term beyond?
It doesn't know about multi-term, so it's just doing single-term permutations of the indices. Yeah, in this part, there is more coming later about multi-term. Okay, so a few other things that it knows about. Well, it can expand out the Riemann tensor in terms of Christoffel symbols. If you just have it here, it looks horrible. It's got all these weird indices, and the reason it has these is it introduces. Every time it needs a dummy index to be introduced, it creates kind of a unique one here, which looks ugly. But fortunately, it provides a function to get rid of all those ugly ones and give you something that looks a lot more user-friendly in terms of normal indices. And there's a little trick you can do to make it always replace those ugly ones with nice ones, which is to set this preprint variable to be equal to that. Okay, and when you do that, when you expand out the Riemann tensor in terms of Christoffel, you get something that's nice and you can actually see what's going on. Okay, a couple more basics before going on to kind of more interesting applications. Well, we know about the Einstein tensor. It's just given in terms of the Ricci. We can expand out the Riemann tensor, as I said, in terms of the Christoffel, and we can in turn expand out to Christoffel in terms of derivatives of the metric. You can see it's all happening instantly. That's actually doing all the calculations. So we now have the Ricci tensor given in terms of metric and its first and second derivatives. That's something that could be useful to have. Okay, just a couple more things. We have covariant derivatives defined, which are input using this CD notation, the covariant derivative. We can do nice things with these, like say we don't like the fact that this is derivative A, derivative B of Riemann. We want it the other way around. Well, we can commute the covariant derivatives, and it will automatically give you the derivatives with the indices swapped and all the extra Riemann terms that come from the fact that you've commuted those derivatives. Okay. You can define your own tensors. So I've defined two here, F, which is anti-symmetric in its indices, and G, which is symmetric. And we can check that contraction of F with itself gets simplified because F is anti-symmetric. G with itself gets simplified. And if you contract F with G, you get zero because the product of a symmetric and an anti-symmetric tensor is zero. I guess lastly, for the overview, you can get things like Lie derivatives. Okay, so you can define some tensor or some vector H here, and you can compute the Lie derivative of your previous tensor and expand that out in terms of covariant derivatives. All happens automatically. Well, you have to tell it to expand out the Lie derivative in terms of covariant derivatives. Okay, so that was a whirlwind summary of exact. All very simple tensor manipulations there, nothing very complicated, but hopefully it gives you a flavor of how you interact with the system. Okay, now onto some more cool applications. Okay, number one is working with Lagrangians. So quite often you might have a situation where you have a Lagrangian for a problem and you want to define an equation of motion from that Lagrangian. Okay, so maybe a familiar one to a lot of people is the Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian, which is just the square root of term of the metric times Ricci scalar. We can define that as a Lagrangian. I've expanded out the Ricci scalar in terms of Christoffel, and then in turn expanded Christoffel out in terms of derivatives of the metric. So this Lagrangian is now given as the expression in terms of the metric and its derivatives. Well, to get the Einstein equation out of that Lagrangian, we just operated on it with a variational derivative, which effectively does your integration by parts. And it'll take a little while to run, maybe a few seconds, but at the end of it, what you get out is the Einstein equation written in terms of the metric and its derivatives. Okay, so it ran in about 10 or so seconds there. Okay, and well, you might say, well, how do I know that this is the Einstein equation? You can check. So I've defined EE to be this thing derived from the Lagrangian. If I subtract away from that the Einstein metric itself that exact knows about, expand out in terms of the metric, well, and ask it to simplify, it gives zero. Okay, so we've got the Einstein equation out from the Lagrangian in one slide. Okay. Yeah?
What do no scalar and use metric have to
be on them? Okay, so no scalar is basically when you simplify these things, it kind of puts a little wrapper around some of the expressions, scalar, to say that they're scalars, and they just clutter up the output. Okay. This use metric and V bundle, well, when the simplification function does all the canonicalization, one step of canonicalizing an expression is moving indices up and down. Okay. Sometimes you don't want it to do that. For example, when you have things written in terms of partial derivatives, you're not allowed just shift indices up and down, or you'll get in trouble. So this tells it not to do any index manipulation using the metric in its simplification procedure. Okay, so that's Lagrangians. Another interesting application is perturbation theory. Okay, so for this, there's a separate package called XPERT, which again is included with exact, so you just load it.
Hold on, how do we specify the metric? Or do we,
components? No, this is all still in terms of abstract metric things. So the last example I have is in terms of components at the end of the talk. But this is all still kind of abstract. Okay. So when we're talking about metric perturbations, well, you have a background plus some perturbed metric. So you're writing your full metric is equal to some background plus some order counting parameter epsilon times a first order perturbation plus maybe you have an epsilon squared HAB2 and maybe you have many more terms in there. Okay, so the first thing to do is to say that we have a perturbation H to the metric G, and the perturbation parameter is epsilon. So we tell exact that that's what we want to do. I have a little bit of code here, which I won't go into, but it just prints out the indices with nice colors. And then we're ready to go. Okay, so a very simple example. Let's say we have the metric itself, the covariant metric, and we want the expansion of that to fourth order, so the fourth to epsilon to the four. Well, this function perturbs with the expression in the first argument and a number in the second does exactly that. Okay, and this is exactly what you expect. The perturbation of the metric is the background plus first order, second order, third order, fourth order perturbations. Okay, that's a very simple one. Likewise, if you just want the perturbation of a specific order, well, there's a second function called perturbation, and that will just give me back the first order perturbations of the metric. Okay, so far, so good, very, very simple. You could do that in your head. Interesting problems. From my own research, Eric mentioned that I work on sources of gravitational waves. So one of those is the binary black hole problem, and in particular, the regime where the black holes have very different masses. So where one is extremely large and the other one is not so large. Within this regime, numerical relativity, unfortunately, doesn't quite cut it. And the reason it doesn't is because of this mass ratio. You have very different length scales. It's basically an impossible problem, at the moment anyway, and for the foreseeable future, to solve numerically. Okay. So all of the efforts that have gone into kind of studying these extreme mass ratio binary systems have really been built around perturbation theory. So rather than solving the full Einstein equations, do some linearized expansion about a background and solve the simpler problem, that simpler problem. Okay, so if you want to do that sort of calculation, the first thing you need to know is, well, what equations am I solving? So first step is say, well, I have the Einstein equation, and I want to actually compute a perturbation to that to first order, the first order in epsilon. Okay, that's straightforward. It gives you this, when you use perturbation, it doesn't expand it out. It just says, well, this is now a first order perturbation to the Einstein tensor. Okay. If we want to actually expand that out in terms of the metric and metric perturbation, we have a couple of functions. We have expand perturbation, which does exactly that. It expands things out, knowing that G, the Einstein tensor, has some expansion in the metric. And then I simplify it, simplify the output for it, so it's easier to see. Okay, and if I do that, you get the linearized Einstein equation at first order in epsilon. Okay, so you can see that there are lots of terms that look like second derivatives of H1, and there are also a few Ricci tensor terms and Ricci scalar terms and things like that. Okay, so this is the linearized Einstein equation. Usually, you don't stop here. You have to choose, for example, a gauge choice for the perturbation. And you probably also want to simplify the equations a bit. So when people do perturbation theory, often they don't work with the metric perturbation itself, but they do a trace reversal on the metric. Okay, so instead of working with HAB, they work with H bar AB, which is H minus a half the trace times GAB. Okay, so I'm going to define a new tensor called H bar, which is the trace reversal of H. And I'm going to create a Mathematica rule to, instead of whenever it encounters H, replace it with H bar. Okay, so this helps simplify the equations a bit. You can see now that whereas before we had a two-line equation, the trace reversal gets it down to something a lot more manageable, one line. But there are still some terms that we don't quite like in here. In particular, these terms here, where we have a contracted derivative, we'd really like to write that as a divergence. Okay, so we'd like to bring the C inside the A covariant derivative to write it in a simpler form. Well, exact knows how to commute these derivatives and bring in Riemann tensors. So we'll get it to do exactly that. We write a rule that says whenever you have contracted indices in a derivative and it's on the outside, rearrange it so that derivatives are the other way around on the inside. The contracted index is on the inside. You have it as a divergence plus a couple of Riemann tensors. Okay, and I didn't actually write out this. I just got Mathematica or Exact to commute the covariant derivatives in the original expression. Okay, so when you do that, you get something that looks a little bit longer, but is actually a bit easier to work with. Okay, so this is the new form of the linearized Einstein equation. We still have things like the Ricci tensor in here and the Ricci scalar in here. This is completely generic. And you have these now divergence type terms in here, plus things that look like the wave operator. Okay, so for the very last step in black hole simulations, well, what we have is a vacuum spacetime. So I'm going to turn off all the Riemann tensors or the Ricci tensors and the Ricci scalar. So set the Ricci tensor and the Ricci scalar to be zero, and we get something a little bit simpler. And the very last step is gauge choice. So the linearized Einstein equation takes a very nice form if you work in Lorentz gauge, which is where the divergence of the metric perturbation is zero. So let mu h nu nu equal zero. That's the Lorentz gauge choice. That will kill off all of the divergence pieces, so those three terms. Okay. In fact, people often like to work not in Lorentz gauge, but in a generalized Lorentz gauge where you actually don't set that to zero, but set it to some vector z. I have a rule for replacing the divergence of h with that vector. And then at the very end, you get the linearized Einstein equation at first order. It's just a wave operator acting on h plus two Riemann. This is probably very familiar to anyone who's worked with linearized Einstein equations, plus a few gauge terms, which are zero in Lorentz gauge. OK, so that's great, but you could say, well, I could do that by hand. It's actually not that hard. The manipulations are a little bit tricky, but I can do it. Well, OK, in the self-force problem, we're actually interested not only in first order, but in second order perturbations. OK, so for the purposes of actual gravitational wave detection, it's pretty well accepted now that actually, you don't just need the first order perturbations of the metric, you need order epsilon squared perturbations as well. And that's a much harder problem. We could go back and do it all by hand, or we could just get Exact to do it for us. Okay, and again, it happened almost instantly. This is all very fast calculations. And you can see what you get now is this is actually the second order linearized Einstein equation. Just like before, you have things involving H2, the second order metric perturbation. And you have derivatives of H2. You have things that look like the wave operator acting on H2. You could rearrange all of this and get an equation for H2, the second order metric perturbation, which looks just like the first order one, but with H2 instead of H1, plus a whole load of extra terms which act as sources. And those terms all involve the first order perturbation. Okay, so this is the sort of problem we want to solve for extreme mass ratio in spirals. Maybe in a few generations, people might say, well, second order, that's easy. If that ever happens, well, we could go to third order. Exact doesn't really break a sweat. You can ask it to do the third order calculation. It maybe takes a few seconds, but you can see it just finished. And now you have the third order expansion of the linearized Einstein equations. A whole lot of terms, but, well, it's fine. Okay, I wouldn't want to solve them numerically, but maybe someone does. Okay, and why stop there? Well, just to be a bit ambitious, I've chosen to go to eighth order in perturbation theory. That's fine. Okay, this one takes a little bit longer because it's eighth order in perturbation theory. You're expanding out the Einstein tensor to eighth order, which is quite a bit, but it's finished. There are now 47,488 terms in this equation, pretty horrendous. And if we just look at the last 1% or so of them, you can see that they all they have the sort of thing you'd expect. Lots of combinations of lower order perturbations as sources, plus the eighth order perturbation itself is somewhere in there. Okay, so I'm running out of time. I'll maybe go through this very quickly. Another thing you might want to do would be, say, compute perturbation of the tetrad components of the Riemann tensor. That's another thing we do for these binary black hole problems, and that's something you can do very easy as well. So I've defined a tetrad here. I've asked it for the Riemann tensor in that tetrad, project onto that tetrad, give me the perturbation of that. It gives a perturbation of the Riemann tensor and a perturbation of the tetrad, and expand the whole thing out, and you get things in terms of the metric perturbation and the tetrad perturbation. Okay, again, you can go to higher orders, and it doesn't break a sweat. Okay, how am I doing? I'm running out of time. Okay, so another thing that's very useful, which I've used a lot in my own research, is canonicalization. So this goes back to the question earlier about, say I have some complicated expression in terms of Riemann tensors. I don't want to just permute indices. I want to use the Bianchi identity. I want to use multi-term symmetries. Okay. Turns out that EXACT can do this as well. If you have only scalars and no derivatives, it's well known that there are only 14 different things you can construct from the Riemann tensor in four dimensions, and everything else can be written in terms of that. So EXACT can rewrite any polynomial in Riemann in terms of these 14 things. As I said, it can do single-term symmetries where it just permutes indices fine, but if you have something like the cyclic identity for the Riemann tensor or the Bianchi identity, it can't quite do it. It can get rid of some of the terms, but it doesn't know about the fact that the sum of these three things is zero. You could go about making all your own set of Mathematica rules to actually define the Bianchi identity, the cyclic permutation of the Riemann tensor, and it would work. But why bother when Invar, which is one of the EXACT packages, has done this for you already? So it provides not just these two rules, but all possible rules for simplifying these equations up to a specific order. It's done this as a pre-computed set, which you download, and then it gives you a function, Riemann simplify, which actually applies those rules. Okay. So we load the Invar package. And here's one example. Okay, we have some combination of Riemann tensors, derivatives, all contracted. Well, it's not obvious to me that that should be zero, but if you ask EXACT, it simplifies it and it tells you, yes, that is zero. Okay, so this turns out to be very useful, a very useful tool in a lot of problems. Okay, in my own research, one that has come up where it was really useful is, what's going on here?
Projector, the screen's still working.
Screen is working there, okay, strange. Okay, so in my own work, working on kind of calculations involving the wave operator and correspondingly the heat kernel, these appear actually in a large range of problems. So they certainly appear in the self-force or the radiation reaction problem where we're doing these binary black holes, but they also appear in quantum field theory calculations and curved space-time and quantum gravity calculations, things like that. The quantum side of things is reviewed in this review by Vasilevich, and there's a review on the kind of classical side for point particles in relativity, reviewed by Poisson, Pound and Vega, who were all at Guelph when they wrote that. And then there's actually another interesting one by Avramidi saying how you can make money off this in financial mathematics. Okay, so these all the methods I'm going to describe really evolved from work from a long time ago by Hadamard and by DeWitt, so decades ago. And actually, an interesting side note, they were one of the main drivers for developing tensor algebra in the first place, this problem. So Christensen developed MathTensor in the 80s, or possibly the early 90s, specifically to solve the problem that I'm going to talk about. The basic goal is to compute bitensors, which are the coefficients in an expansion, and the coefficients are denoted by A sub n, where n is the order, and these are usually called Witt-Schwinger coefficients. There are lots of other names people use for them, depending on the particular fields that they're used in. They're usually named after someone. But in the physics literature, I think the Witt-Schwinger is probably the commonly known one. They're very closely related to short time expansions of the heat kernel in a Riemannian space. So they're called heat kernel coefficients in mathematics literature. Usually people want not an of x and x primed, but the coincidence limit where you get an of x and x. So you want this coincidence limit because that gives you a lot of information about effective action and trace anomalies and things like that in quantum theory. And they're also used for binary black holes. Okay, so I won't go into details, but there was a package that I had written at one point which computes these expansions. Okay, so called covariant series, gives you a whole load of expansions of these DeWitt coefficients in terms of these kind of symbolic tensor-free products of tensors. So K here and R are just some combination of Riemann tensors. It goes very efficiently. It can go up to quite high orders. So I've included here up as far as A5, which has 13,972 terms. And in fact, it's much worse than that because all of those terms are symmetrized over very many indices. Okay, so that was the code I'd written. This doesn't use any, has nothing to do with exact. But where exact comes in is, well, it's not very convenient to have so many terms. We want to actually simplify it. Okay, so I have a block of code which loads exact. And now I can output the expressions for these coefficients in terms of, well, numbers, in terms of the Ricci scalar, and maybe a coupling constant. And because I'm using extensor, it's very easy to go to high orders and get lots of expressions involving Riemann tensors. Okay, this here looks horrible. There are lots of terms, but actually we can simplify it using invar. Not sure. Still on up there. Does anyone know?
Just check the connection from the computer, because I have it here and the projector shows that it's on.
Okay. It's still up on the screen behind. Are we plugging it back in? Okay, still back up on the screen there, but not on the projector.
Maybe if you unplug and replug.
Yeah, I tried that. So.
Maybe we can all turn around.
Sorry?
Maybe we can all turn around.
Yeah, you can see it on the screen behind you, if not on the main screen. Oh, it's back. Okay, back connection.
Quick
before, yeah. I think maybe that's a sign I should try and wrap up soon. Okay, so as I was saying, these expansions lead to really long expressions involving the Riemann tensor and products of Riemann tensors, a complete nightmare to do by hand. That's where that first page of calculations came from. But it turns out that if you ask exact to simplify it, which is what these set of commands are doing, it comes out to something really nice and simple. Okay, so that's pretty elegant, and you know that this is as simple as it can possibly get. There's no way you can get fewer terms, almost. Okay, and because we could, of course, we can take this to much higher order. So the A3 coefficient has 2,334 terms. That's fine. Exact still knows how to simplify it down into just a handful. We went further than this and did a whole host of them. So there's a list here in the table here. You can see that for A9, even in a vacuum space-time, you have 6 million terms. And these 6 million terms are symmetrized over very many indices. So there are actually 6 million times some number of factorial terms. And we didn't quite manage to do that one in exact, but we did manage to do these lower ones up to 4,988, symmetrized over, I think, 5 or 6 indices. So by this number of times 5 factorial actual terms, and exact brings it down to just 50. Okay, so this turns it from a problem where basically there's no way you're going to do anything with them into something where, well, I can handle 50 terms pretty okay. There was a lot of effort in the past to try and compute these things by various people. Some people succeeded, but usually they succeeded in the sense that they got these big, long expressions in terms of loads of terms that are actually equivalent or zero, but they didn't know it. This was the first time it was possible to actually get them simplified. Okay, so I guess I'm just about out of time, but I will just mention that you can also do component calculations with exact. I think Eric mentioned there was a talk about this maybe a couple of weeks ago, so I won't go into details, but I will just point out that this is probably the most, in my opinion, the most clunky part of exact. You have to do a whole lot of things just before you can get started. So you have to define a manifold, you have to load the package, you have to define a manifold, define a metric, define your coordinate tensors, define a chart, set the components in metric, and so on and so forth. In the longer term, it would be nice to not have all of these things and have something simple. I've got my own package built on top of Xcoba, which does this provides basically a predefined set of space-times, which it knows about. So it's a little bit like GR tensor. And that's what I'll just show here, this last slide. Okay, so I load, let me just start the kernel again. So I load the package. I tell it that I want the Schwarzschild metric. I tell it to compute a few things in the Schwarzschild spacetime that it knows how to compute, and then we're ready to go. Say we want to calculate these two invariants, the Kretschmann scalar, which is the square of the Riemann tensor, and also the cube of the Riemann tensor, all contracted over all indices. Well, Xcoba knows how to do that. I won't go into the details of what all these things mean, but you can see that it can compute the Kretschmann scalar, and it gets the right answer for Schwarzschild. It also works for Kerr, and so it works for the cube of the Riemann tensor. And similarly, you can do the same thing for Kerr. And it comes out pretty nicely. This is the Kretschmann scalar in Kerr, and this is the cube of the Riemann tensor in Kerr. OK, so just to wrap up, I've barely scratched the surface of what's possible with exact. I've given you a couple of examples from my own research. There are a whole load more. So you can use it for code generation. You can use it for computing things like bioscalars, things in the Newman-Penrose formalism. The original reason I think it was developed as a tool by Jose Maria was to actually come up with formulations of the Einstein equations. So this was back before people had figured out how to run binary black holes. They were figuring out, they were trying to see, well, if I just fiddle with the equations, do I get something stable? So it was designed for that, and it can be used for that. I guess it's also been used for cosmology and things like that, and a whole lot of other scenarios which I list there. Okay, so I think I'm out of time. I'll just leave it there, and any questions are welcome.
Questions are existing. You'll be here today and tomorrow, so you can also come to this office to ask some questions.
So, if we need some analytic calculation, maybe this is a mathematical question, mm-hmm. And then we want to use that output as an input to a C code.
Right. Yeah.
Usually, Mathematica doesn't have a very efficient way of writing in a format suitable for C.
Yeah. So I guess so. You're talking about if you have some differential equation that you want to solve. So
yes, it does.
Eric is an expert on this sort of stuff. And there is this code called Frank. And the purpose of this is to take a mathematical expression for some differential equation and generate the C code automatically, which will hook into the Cactus framework for solving PDEs. And it deals with all the issues of actually the numerical solution. And in principle, all you need to worry about is, am I solving the right equations? Are my equations stable? So there is this crank tool, which I guess Eric is very capable of explaining to people.
So you mean it provides the answer in the it solves it in C and gives the answer in mathematical?
No,
or
so this,
it produces a code that can be implemented in another
so
C code?
It produces some C code, which can then be used with the Cactus. Cactus is a framework for solving differential equations on big clusters. And Eric was one of the main developers of Cactus. So it's a two-step process. You generate the code, and then you run it on a cluster. This is what people use for solving binary black holes using numerical relativity. Yeah.
So Frank, it's nice if you want to solve equations in 3D time-dependent PDEs.
Yes.
If you want to solve something in binary historic symmetry, then it's probably too large, too clunky, too much overhead.
Yep.
It's meant for 3D, maybe you have other problems than something.
One thing that Cadabra could do that this doesn't is support for anti-symmetric or non-commuting tensors.
So I think that should be still possible in exact.
Yeah, is that easy to
yeah.
That?
So you mean I'm not sure. I haven't tried to do it myself, but I'd imagine it should be possible. So I think Cadabra is built on XPerm, which is the kind of the core engine of XACT. So I'd be surprised if something is possible in Cadabra that is not possible in here, given that they use the same code at their.
I'm worried that you have to redo the whole canonicalizer.
Right. So, yeah. I as far as I remember, Cadabra does use the same canonicalizer. It uses XACT's canonicalizer. So I can't see any reason why XACT wouldn't be able to handle this problem.
So yeah. Where can we get this book presentation?
I'll figure something out,
yeah.
And then you can ask me, or I'll send an email along.
Yeah, so I'll give Eric a copy anyway. There are lots of other, if you look on the website, there are other tutorials, some similar to this, which you can also download. But yeah.
You'll attach it to cursor where the drop is recorded.
And I guess if you have other questions, as I said, the mailing list is very responsive, so send an email and someone will reply.
Other questions? Okay, very good. Thank you again.